You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council.
And I'm Emily Stearns, health, welfare, and regulatory affairs liaison for the American Horse Council.
And you are listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 2025. Good morning, horse world.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
Well, summer vacation is officially here, and it is hot as heck in Washington, D.C., folks. Kids are getting out of school, and we're all looking for ways to enjoy the sunshine. And most notably, it's about time when everybody is ready to enjoy outdoors with their horses. Summer ends up being a great time to explore not just our trails at home, but also those all around the country and the world.
And I know we say this a lot, but I will say it again. One of my favorite stats from the economic impact study is that there were over 2 million trail rides in one summer in our national parks. And we all love to travel, and traveling either with your horse or to somewhere you can be with horses is always a great time.
Yeah. And Emily, remind me now, didn't you just take a little horsey trip this winter?
I did. So we'll call it the baby moon. We always like to find places to find horses when we travel, and we ended up going to Iceland in February. And I must admit, I've been very spoiled in my trips the last couple of years. So we couldn't possibly go to Iceland without riding some Icelandic ponies. So a dear friend and I, we had an amazing trail ride kind of out by the coast where there was no snow yet. And it went over the river and up to a waterfall, and those kind of furry little Ewok ponies just marched straight through the 38-degree river, up to their chests, no questions asked, didn't even look at the water. And, I mean, I think the saving grace was that it was a beautiful sunny day, even if it was just barely above freezing. So there was that. But enough about me. Didn't you and your husband take a lovely little horse trip a couple years ago or last year?
Yep, I've been on two trips. I went to Puerto Rico with my sister and did a beach ride, which was wow. So much fun. So beautiful. But most recently, I took my husband with me on a business trip to Tucson. And believe it or not, we got a special sort of backstage view of the White Stallion Ranch, which is a beautiful family dude ranch. Three generations of family have run the ranch. And we went out on a great trail ride and just had the whole chuck wagon experience. It was so much fun. And I always am recommending White Stallion Ranch for anybody who wants to take their family. They have all kinds of amenities and all kinds of things to do. And it's just lovely.
I know. I feel like I'm already thinking about our next trip and where we want to go and how to incorporate our newest little passenger when she comes along. So I think because we're so excited for vacation season, Julie, we thought we'd have a guest this month who can give us all some tips and tricks for taking a little horse trip. Yeah?
Yeah, sounds great.
So first, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Poplas Architecture. From world-class equestrian facilities, race courses, exhibition buildings, and entertainment venues, the team at Poplas uses its world-renowned expertise to create some of the most recognizable, immersive equine and entertainment experiences across the globe. From Churchill Downs and the new Belmont Park, the Houston Livestock Show, and the rodeo at the Calgary Stampede, Poplas specializes in planning, design, and development of the world's foremost venues. And Todd Gurrell, who is their lead in the equine division, was at our conference in June, and he gave an update on the great new work that they're doing at the Oklahoma State Fairgrounds. They just unveiled their new show arena there, so it's really exciting. So thanks to Poplas for sponsoring this. Okay, Emily, now that we've teed up this topic, who is our guest?
So our guest this month is Rebecca Butts, and Becca is currently a resident of the Poconos in Pennsylvania, and she has volunteered and worked at a variety of horse businesses since a young age. And the majority of these businesses were located on the East Coast in the U.S. But most recently, she's been in beautiful Croatia, where she's working as a guide. And she's been really excited to share her ideas on how more Americans can access horse experiences across the globe as we strive to be well-rounded horse people and promote horse welfare and get really great experiences. So welcome, Becca.
Hi, Dobrojutro. Good morning in Croatian. Great to be here. I reached out to Emily when I was in Croatia last year, and I wanted to share all the great things that I was doing there. And I wanted more Americans to be able to come out and experience these trails as well. So I'm excited to talk about this today.
Oh, gosh, we're excited, too. But you've got to begin with some context. Like, tell me how the heck you went from New England, East Coast to leading pack trips in Croatia.
The too long didn't read version is totally by accident. Like, this was not something that I sought out or planned at all. But the story is kind of cool. So I'll share. I have a friend who does a lot of these international trips, and she uses a travel agency called Equus Journeys, which I'll mention later when I have recommendations. And so they do a really good job of screening all the different providers that they work with, all the partnerships that they have. All the agents have been on these trips before, so they can tell you exactly what to expect. They can tell you, you know, they can help you select your trip that is just right for you based on your riding experience level, what you're looking for, where in the world that you want to go, how much you want to spend. So my friend invited me. There was an extra spot in a trip to Croatia. I could actually afford it. This is something that I never thought that I could do, especially as a horse person. I just thought, you know, these vacations were out of my price range. This is like, you know, what the rich people do. And this trip was really accessible and I was surprised. So I went in there totally, you know, eyes open, but no expectations. I didn't know much about Croatia. I knew that it was a beautiful country in the Mediterranean. They have good food, apparently. There's some really pretty beaches, but we were actually going to go into a national park called Krka. And their national parks in Croatia are super unique. Just the ecosystems, you don't find them anywhere else in the world. The water is so clear. You can see the fish at the bottom of the lake. So it was very easy to talk me into going on that trip. And while I was there, I really got in touch with what makes me love being with horses and where I want my place to be in the horse industry. Speaking of New England, Emily, so we never knew each other on Cape Cod, but I used to take out trails into Nickerson State Park. And that is, to this day, my favorite job ever. And while I was on this week-long trail, I really was just like thinking, like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I not doing this all the time? And maybe like a third of the way through the trip, halfway through the trip, I was on a high. Like, we had had a great day riding for maybe 6 hours, galloping through fields, had a delicious meal that was made by our hosts, wine that was, you know, made on that property. And so I worked up the courage to ask our host or our tour guide, the owner of the company, if there was any learning experiences for me. Like, hey, do you have like a week this summer where your staff want a break and can I come help? And they were so kind. I actually expected them to like sort of dismiss me and say like, oh yeah, people ask us that all the time. Like, go back to America, have fun. but they took it so seriously and they said, you know, let me make a couple phone calls. I think I know somebody who could use your help. And I ended up coming back that summer to work at a different national park called Plitvice Lakes, and also gorgeous. And at a business that was trying to get its footing, it had been established, and then the owner unfortunately passed away. So this young woman named Mara, who's now like one of my best people, she was trying to get this business, you know, going again and in this new location with 20 horses that she was taking care of by herself. So I was able to jump in, and I think I'm proud to say that I influenced her to keep the business open, because when I first got there, she was selling some of her horses and she thought she was going to have to close down. And between me and some of the great guests that we had on that trip, she's still open today, which I'm really happy to say.
Full disclosure to everyone listening out there, Becca mentioned growing up on Cape Cod, and we both grew up in Cape Cod, but actually didn't meet until college, which is considering we grew up riding about 5 miles from each other and never crossed paths, is a very strange thing in a very small world out there. But it's really, you mentioned, you know, having that kind of like enlightening moment on the trail ride in the state park. And I had that kind of same moment myself on a trail ride just post COVID, where I was really struggling with, like, you know, eventing had shut down. There was no horse shows and I was on a trail ride, full disclosure, in Norway and on this beautiful mountainside on this really big, wonderful drum horse, and just had this moment of like, oh, this is why I really like this. Like this is why I really like horses. So, you know, there's something about traveling that kind of, I think, puts that in your brain a little bit and gets you all back with your roots of, oh, like, this is why I like this. This is why I'm in the industry. So that all kind of sounds like the easy bit. So talk a little bit about what's the hardest part about traveling abroad to go hang out with horses, go for a ride, go do volunteer work or whatever it is.
So hands down, the Wi-Fi. It's a lot better than you'd expect in some places. And some places you just are not going to have connection. So I was working remotely at my regular job. At the time, I was chief operating officer at a nonprofit, my non-horse life. So with the time difference of 6 hours, it actually worked out great, where I could work with the horses in the morning. And then later in the afternoon, in the evening, I could do my normal job. But I had almost a crisis when I first arrived on my second trip, because on the first trip, even though we were out at a national park, I still had some signal. It wasn't great everywhere. And, you know, with my limited Croatian language skills, I'm trying to speak to my new friend Mara, saying, you know, I need like a good connection. I need to do video sometimes. And she's like, don't worry about it. I got it. And then I get there and it's like a dead zone. We're in this like old stone farmhouse that like blocks everything. You're probably super safe in there. So I had to get a little creative. Like, there's a spot in the middle of the field where if you put your chair, you'll get some bars. Or go to the cafe bar, which is always a good place to hang out in Europe. You have your coffee or your beer any time of the day. So connectivity was probably the most challenging thing to manage while I was there. But I think for most people, it's getting your life covered while you're away. If you're going on a week-long tour, that's kind of a normal vacation. But, you know, I was there for 3 weeks. And, you know, if you own horses or have kids or, you know, like a real life here in America, you have to get that covered. So realistically, I know that's probably a barrier for a lot of people, but I would encourage them to try anyways. Like, you know, don't just dismiss that you could never do it. But there also, like I said, there's so many different ways to travel abroad, work with horses, just enjoy a horse vacation. You don't have to go for a month. You'll want to, trust me, but it's not obligatory. I was surprised actually at things that weren't barriers. Like, it was not a financial burden. It's much less expensive. Everything was much less expensive in Croatia. And I was cut off from my Amazon packages. So I actually saved some money. I've gotten much better now. It was an eye-opening experience. You know, when you need something, you have to like just find it. Like, it's like the old days. You're not, you know, online saying, oh, okay, I'll just get it shipped to my door. Also, the language barrier. Croatian is a really difficult language, and I knew nothing going in. I speak a little bit of German, and my German friends and family are probably like cackling right now hearing me say that, because I'm not very good. But that actually helped. You know, in Europe, obviously, everybody's much closer together. So you do run into people who know a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But we really, you know, spoke through the universal language of horses. Like, you get sort of stripped down as, you know, an American that's kind of used to having everything at your fingertips. And you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, I can survive barely being able to communicate with, you know, without all of my usual comforts.
I was just going to say, I thought the hardest part was figuring out what to pack.
you're right about that. I was going to mention actually laundry and showers. So I am a long shower person, and especially after a day at the barn, like, you're just so sweaty and dirty. Yeah. And we were using just collected rainwater on this farm, so you had to keep the showers short. It was a normal thing to wear your clothes a couple times before you washed it, so I felt real stanky, but it was okay.
it's the good kind of stink. Yeah
exactly. I didn't get out much anyway, so if you're around the horses, you can just blame them.
That's funny. Well, so you've talked about the hard part. Talk about the favorite part. What's best?
Happy to talk about that. So I don't even know how to pick my most favorite, but I have a little list here. First, getting to see a country up close and personal like that was such a privilege. I heard a phrase recently, and I don't know where it came from, but access is ownership. So, you know, obviously this is national park, this is other people's property for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, but I got to visit it and see it and hang out with those people in their little kitchen, drinking coffee that was made on the stove, like on the wood fire stove, while there's a thunderstorm outside. Like, how do you, that's priceless, right?
Yeah.
So getting to meet those people, being in those really privileged, intimate spaces. What else? I mean, it just, not to sound cliche, but it opens your mind so much. So when I was on my first trip, I was there with five Americans, and it was, you know, a really great bonding girls trip for us. But we also got to meet people from Austria, people from Greece, people from France. And it just brought us all together where, you know, we would never have met these people. We would never have think that we have something in common, but we had the horses in common, and we were all really enjoying the nature, taking photos of each other, helping each other out. And yeah, I can't put a price tag on that. These are all people that I'm still in touch with today, which is really, really nice. We actually plan to return at the end of August. Some of the people that I met last year will go back to Croatia this year and hang out for a little bit.
I feel like it's one of those things where, especially when you talk about kind of looking at how other groups are doing things with horses and people in other countries are doing things with horses, there's definitely, I've done so many horse things, you know, outside of my farm and outside of the U.S. that gets really exciting, that it's almost, you don't even realize you're starting to incorporate these other cultural horse things into how you're interacting with your own horses. Like, you know, when I brought the horses home, how I wanted to have them be in and out and how I wanted to manage turnout. Like, there's definitely, I look around how I'm managing my own property, and there's definitely little pieces of all the places I've visited that have kind of wormed their way into it, and all kind of the little bits I wanted to bring home and felt like they were easier, more manageable than the ways, you know, we had been brought up doing things.
Totally. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because honestly, to answer your question, what is my favorite thing about going abroad to work with horses is that new perspective on horse care and horsemanship. One of the things that I fell in love with in Croatia was the pride that they take in being good horse people and doing right by their equine partners. You know, both places that I went to, it was a business, but those horses were so happy. They were so fit. That's actually what got me into like asking, like, hey, how can I learn more about this? Because our guide, the owner of the ranch on the first trip, Bosco, he was, you know, a little braggadocious. And he honestly deserved to be, because he ran a top quality operation there. But, you know, I saw him like each time we brought the horses in, at the end of the day, he would inspect them and make sure that everybody was feeling good. And these horses were so fit. They were so happy to have a job. My jaw almost hit the floor when he told me that they go out like week after week after week after week, and they don't want a break. Like, if a horse wants a break, they make sure that they get it. But the horses seem to do the best when they're doing their job. They want to be out with their friends. And just this back to basics approach, I really was taken with, because I'm, again, used to all the frills of being on the East Coast and thinking about what we do in a day to take care of the barn. And like, there's so many steps. And I'm not knocking any of that. I'm not saying that it's not worth it. You know, you might go to Croatia and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe these horses eat bread, not grains. Like, they get stale bread and they don't get fed grain. Like, there's definitely some things to get used to that I don't know would fly here. But it really appealed to me to be more self-sufficient. It's like, okay, this is what you need to do for the horses, and these other things might be nice to haves. But, you know, if you're out in the wilderness, like, what do you do to take care of your horse? What do you do to get through that experience and have a good time, keep it safe, keep it ethical?
Yeah.
I have to say, we just had a guest at our conference in June. He was from the United Arab Emirates, and he featured their endurance village, and so makes me want to go. It was just absolutely amazing. I'm like, wow. Wow. So
I'm here to tell you should go. Yeah. My purpose today. Anybody who's on the fence, take the trip.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We need to send an AHC ambassador, Julie. I think
I need to go and visit. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Can we set up a horse embassy like in every country?
Hey.
Okay. So we've talked about all the great things and the hard things and, you know, how people end up maybe deciding where to go, but what should a tourist or a visitor or a volunteer or someone looking to work abroad, what should they be thinking about when deciding where to go? Like, there's so many places out there to go experience horses, whether you just want to go have a lesson or a trail ride or something, or if you want to do a week-long pack trip, what are the things people should be looking for and how do they decide what's best for them?
Sure. I'm going to give a really simple answer, and it's not the only answer, but working with an agency like Equus Journeys made me really confident that I was going to a place where they had checked it out. You know, they know that it's a legitimate operation, that the horses are well taken care of. Equus Journeys has a commitment to sustainable tourism, which made me really happy to work with them. And I have to give my friend Sue a credit because she's the one who originally found them. And she's somebody who does all her research and she does not just give her business to anybody. So for me, it was really easy because I could trust that she did that. And they came really highly recommended by her. And she's gone on dozens of trips, like to Africa. Like she went to Argentina this year, like a Patagonia trip. So she's made use of the selection of offerings that they have. But just the fact that my travel agent Iris like knew the horses that I was riding and knew the people and knew exactly where I was going to go, it was so helpful just to know exactly, you know, what do I need for this trip. I'm hearing it from someone who has been there. If you don't want to use that travel agency, I would say be careful, because I've secondhand learned experiences from other travel agencies, not American, they were all European, that just didn't offer the level of service and didn't take some precautions. Like Equus Journeys requires you to purchase travel insurance, and it was super cheap, but worth it. And I saw, unfortunately, what happened to some people who didn't have the insurance and their trip got messed up and the company tried to get the barn owner to pay for someone's flight. Like it was just crazy. So you don't want to be in that situation. That ruins your trip for sure. Something, you know, it's horses, like things unplanned will happen and you want to be covered. So, you know, go with somebody that is thinking about all those things, has done it themselves. I would say, you know, if you have somebody who speaks the language, it's nice to have that person kind of check in with the owner ahead of time. On a totally separate trip, I did a really great trip to Costa Rica and did a beach ride there and had a similar, like, very impressed experience of the operation there, how well they've ran things and how well they took care of the horses. And it was really helpful that I had a friend who was from Costa Rica who picked that business because they were able to talk to the owner. So if you can make any kind of contact ahead of time, if you don't have the help of an agency, that I would recommend that, just because you don't want to fly all the way to Europe or another country and find yourself in a situation that you're not comfortable in because you feel like the horses aren't treated well. And, you know, a lot of that comes with, you know, maybe our bias as, you know, Americans, like we think that there's one way. But what I mean is like the horror stories that a lot of people say, like, oh, like I went there, the horses were so thin, I felt so bad. Like you definitely don't want that.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Thin horses, saddle sores.
Right.
Bad bits, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I would say too, if you don't want to go through a travel agency, get really familiar with how review sites work, like TripAdvisor and Yelp and even just Google reviews, you know, exactly. Make sure you know how to spot fake reviews. Make sure you look for photos. Make sure photos are recent, within like the last maybe 3 or 4 months, maybe. Mm-hmm. And the insurance, I think, Julie, you talk about insurance a lot, but trip insurance is good. And I would say, especially because you're doing something with horses and horses are unpredictable, make sure you are covered with health insurance. Sure. When you're traveling, whether you need an extra vacation rider or something, you want to make sure you are covered if you get injured on a horse when you're abroad.
I'm going to add one other thing because I've had this experience. Accurately state your riding ability, your skills, because they're going to put you with a horse and you want to get the right horse. Like, unfortunately, I went on one trip and the person that I was traveling with immediately says, Julie rides all the time. Well, of course, that means I got the most complicated horse in the whole barn. And so when I took my husband, who's not a rider, to a dude ranch, I said, do not say anything about my riding ability. I want a nice, comfortable, easygoing horse, no trouble. And tell them you've never been on a horse because you haven't. But that's my advice.
Yes. Always better to be underhorsed than overhorsed.
Exactly. So, Becca, what's your best piece of advice for a really easy care trip to go?
So I would recommend just going to the Equus Journeys website, and they didn't pay me to promote them. I just am so happy with them, and it feels so good to be able to like refer people to a company that I really, really trust and have confidence in. So even, like I said, even if you don't end up going with them, you can see all the options that are out there, and they allow you to filter by the destination that you want to go to. They have trips that go to every continent. They have different types of trips. So trail riding, pack trips, safaris, beach rides, working holidays. So they actually can connect you if you want to go work and have a reduced price trip. They have trips in the US that are ranches and cattle drives, polo, endurance, natural horsemanship, and dressage also. They go to Portugal as well. So they really have something for everybody. And, you know, if you want a family-friendly trip, that's something that you can check off to filter. You can filter by your riding level, by the price, by when the trip goes out. So just to maybe just like spark your interest, you could look through that.
Well, it sounds like it would be a great source, whether you use them or not, to kind of help mm-hmm. kind of focus where you think you want to go and what kind of experience you want, and might spark, like you said, some ideas and get you thinking. And you know, everybody, do your due diligence, really, really mm-hmm. research and be prepared.
And Becca, if you've never traveled abroad before, it can be so overwhelming to figure out, you know, what kind of country you're looking for. Do you care if English is a primary language? Do you care if they're on the Euro or not? You know, like all that can be very overwhelming. So going with somebody who does that professionally, even if you don't book a trip, if you just consult with them, mm-hmm. that can be really helpful.
Wow. Yeah. And their website is a really good resource for what to expect on your trip. Like, they tell you what are things that you might run into, cultural considerations, like what's considered polite or rude. Like, if you're on your horse and you strike up conversation with the pedestrian, that can be considered like disrespectful in some countries because you're in sort of a superior position. So they give you these tips, like how to navigate when you're there, and they also tell you what charger to bring and what food options there will be. So again, like, you can just check out their website as an informational resource before you go.
I'll also add, as elder millennial, a good guidebook never hurts anybody, especially mm-hmm. if you're going somewhere without Wi-Fi. Something tangible and physical you can bring with you when your phone doesn't work is very, very helpful.
I do have to confess, my cell phone translator has come in really handy when I've been in a foreign country. Like, I'm struggling to have a conversation with you in order to order a meal or to find a pharmacy. And I'm like, say what I say. Okay, you say it. Phone, say it back to them in their language, please. Yeah. Becca, thank you so much for joining us. I'm very excited about this topic. I hope our listeners will get out there and explore the world on horseback. So thanks again.
Thanks. Happy travels, everybody.
Our legislative and regulatory update is brought to you by Piranha. Whether you're on the back of a horse, at the barn, or watching from the sidelines, there is nothing more annoying than a flying insect. Family owned, made in the USA, and with over 50 years of experience, you can count on Piranha, your trusted leader in insect control, to keep those pests at bay. Try Piranha. It really works. We've talked about traveling with horses and mentioned in the beginning that, as reported in our economic impact study, over 2 million people took a trail ride through national parks in one summer. An astounding number. Just always amazes me that that's that big. June was declared Great Outdoors Month. So for our legislative and regulatory report, I thought it would be worth digging into what's currently going on with public lands.
Yes. And to remind everybody, our public lands include more than just our national parks and our national monuments. So we also have our national forests and our Bureau of Land Management lands, which all cover a really significant portion of open space that our trail riders and horse enthusiasts across the country really enjoy. And we had mentioned briefly earlier this year that there's funding and staffing issues already, kind of thanks to the DOGE cuts. So this, what we're about to talk about, would be compounding those issues in kind of a different way.
Absolutely. Our current issue follows the Senate proposals within the One Big Beautiful Bill, the BBB, as they call it for short, to sell off significant portions of public lands. The most recent budget proposal recommends selling off over 3.3 million acres of public lands. And while Senator Mike Lee suggests these sales could be used for housing and rural development initiatives, there is a major concern that the sale interest could be going towards energy, mineral, or oil firms or other development companies such as resorts and golf courses. And I heard this week that there's no restrictions on who could buy these lands. So a foreign country could come in and buy these lands if they wanted to. How would that feel, folks?
Yeah, absolutely. And the concern on our side, from what I understand, is that there's no guarantee for access for recreation or anything like that once the land is sold. And the lands being considered for sale cover all kinds of natural beauty areas, wild protected areas. There's over 300 million acres in all that would be available as part of this sell-off option.
Yep, that's exactly right, Emily. And this is a legislative discussion. It's important to note that this is really a nonpartisan issue. Both sides of the aisle are against this, and the House has already stripped the initiative from some previous bills. It's also important to note that as of June the 24th, the current proposal to sell off the land was removed from the BBB, the One Big Beautiful Bill, as it was found to be illegal in some of its approach. And however, Senator Mike Lee has committed to seeing this portion of the bill either reintroduced as its own bill or somehow otherwise pushed through.
And I think everybody's concern is that once this land is privatized, other than losing access as an outdoor enthusiast, it could also cut off access to other areas of land that stay open. So we already have issues of this with people trying to access trails on forest services where there's nowhere to park or you have to pass through private property to get to the public property. And so once we sell this land, we won't ever be able to get it back unless the private companies decide to donate it back to the government. And accessibility to public lands, again, you know, the lack of parking for those Forest Service trails, limited campsites, it's already impacting us. So we don't want that to get worse.
Yeah. I mean, we hear a lot from just people who are trying to right now go ride on trails and are finding it very difficult to find a camping spot, to find a place to park, to find a park that has hours or are open on certain days that they want to, you know, kind of go and ride, those kinds of things. So also related, the current administration said in late June that it will move to rescind a rule that blocks logging on national forest lands. So this is our plea to all of you who are listening. And we know we ask this nearly every episode, it seems like lately, but there are a lot of topics that we all really need to get involved in. And if this is something you care about, contact your legislator and tell them how you feel. We're happy to help you identify your state house representative or your congressional member. Let them know how you feel about selling off our public lands, and you can email us at info@horsecouncil.org if you need some help.
Yep. And we're always happy to help you identify your Congress member or your state house representative, like we said. So if you don't know who you need to be contacting, we're here to help.
Thank you for joining us today. We'll provide more numbers and links in our show notes. We invite you to support our beloved industry and join the American Horse Council and earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter, which shares the latest in all our legislative happenings, federal, state, as well as more information that horse owners like you need to know. Now, I'm going to add a little caveat here for the first time, folks. We just rolled out a new member loyalty rewards program. So when you join the Horse Council, you pay for your membership, you automatically get a free subscription to a magazine, an equestrian magazine that's of your choice. We've got several options there. And the more you participate, the more points you get and the more prizes you get. So really excited about that. Check it out on our website.
Yes, and you can check out our website, and you can also follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn. And you can also subscribe to this podcast's RSS feed. You can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
And as we always like to say, we are #HereForHorses.